On True Crime Today, what is IgG and how has it already helped to put killers behind bars? And how is it being used in the Brian Koberger case? We're going to take a deep dive into the history of IgG, how it started, what it is, and just how trustworthy it is in a court of law today.
This is True Crime Today. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Thanks for joining us. IgG, what is it? We hear about it all the time in the cases that we cover, and we hear about it solving crimes, and then every once in a while, the opposite side of what's right steps in and goes, nah, this is junk science. We're going to break it down in great detail today, so you walk away from this audio or video going, I know what that is, and I know how powerful it can be. It dives into the world of DNA, genealogy, and how your Aunt Mildred's obsession with finding out if she's 1/16th Cherokee is now helping cops catch killers. That's right. We're talking about investigative genetic genealogy, IgG, one of the latest tools in the crime-solving arsenal that's making criminals sweat more than a vegan at a Texas barbecue. Let's call this section Chapter 1, shall we? The genesis of IgG, from medical marvels to CSI, your cousin's family tree. So, DNA. Remember that stuff? Double helix, genes, the blueprint of life? Yeah, don't worry about it. It all comes down to this. It's a big deal for those in science, and the science nerds who cracked the code back in the day. First, it was all about figuring out if your kid was actually yours, you know, like on Maury, or if the mailman had some explaining to do. Then came the noble quest of mapping the entire human genome. That's right, the Human Genome Project, because it seems we, as a species, love to map out every damn thing, including our genetic code. I'm all for progress, even if it sounds boring as hell, because it led to some pretty impressive and investigative medical breakthroughs. But it also turned into a family tree on steroids. Then came the 21st century, and with it, the age of oversharing. Suddenly, everyone and their grandma wanted to spit in a tube and send it off to companies like 23andMe and Ancestry DNA. Why? To discover if they're 5% Viking, of course, because wouldn't want to brag about their pillaging ancestry to the next people at a cocktail party. Who did you pillage? Who did your ancestors destroy? I'll have a Red Bull and vodka, please. These companies, bless their capitalist hearts, started collecting DNA like baseball cards, if you will. Except instead of trading a Mickey Mantle, you're swapping saliva to find out if you're related to some rando in Scotland. Millions of people willingly hand over their genetic code. I was one of them, too. The most personal information you have, all in the name of tracing their roots. Is it bad? Is it good? I'm going to get into that. It's kind of like Facebook, but for your chromosomes. Kind of. But hold on to your double helixes, folks, because here's where it gets interesting. Enter Cece Moore, the godmother of IgG, a genealogist with a name straight out of a detective novel. Cece, unlike most people, wasn't just satisfied with figuring out if great Uncle Jebediah really did own that tavern back in 1883. She had a bigger idea. A eureka moment, if you will. Cece looked at these massive databases of genetic information bursting with potential relatives and thought, what if we could use this to catch bad guys? So Cece realized that criminals, despite their best efforts, tend to leave their DNA at crime scenes like a drunk guy leaves his dignity at a karaoke bar. And that DNA, my friends, is like a roadmap leading back to their family tree. All those distant cousins who spit in the tube to find out their ancestry, they unknowingly became breadcrumbs in a genetic trail of breadcrumbs leading to their potentially murderous relative. And wouldn't you know it, Miss Moore was onto something. She teamed up with Parabon Nanolabs, because apparently Nanolabs sounds way cooler than we help you find your third cousin who might be a murderer. And together, they started working on the very first cases, developing the method that would become IgG. One of the first cases was in 1987. Yeah, back then. Double murder of Jay Cook and Tanya Van Kleinberg, a Washington State couple. These poor kids were brutally murdered, and the case went cold for over 30 years. But Cece Moore, with her genealogy wizardry and a little help from some newfangled DNA tech, helped crack the case wide open. The killer, some guy who probably thought he got away with it, was finally brought to justice thanks to, you guessed it, his relatives who just wanted to find out if they were related to Charlemagne. So, there you have it. From the dusty archives of medical research to the glitzy world of consumer genetic testing, IgG was born. And it all took a brilliant genealogist, a bunch of people obsessed with their family history, and the realization that even your most distant relatives can rat you out, even if it's posthumously. It's a brave new world, folks, and your DNA is no longer just your own. It's now a public record for your whole family. If you're fascinated by the idea that your great aunt's DNA could finger a killer, who wouldn't be? But how does this whole investigative genetic genealogy thing actually work? Is it just magic? Not quite. It's more like really complicated, high-tech detective work combined with some serious family tree climbing. Think of it as CSI meets Who Do You Think You Are? But with higher stakes than finding out you're related to a 17th century goat farmer. Let's break it down, shall we? Decoding the process, how IgG works, from crime scenes to your cousin. Let's imagine a crime scene. Something nasty has gone down. Our perpetrator, let's call him Joe Schmo, wasn't careful enough. He left behind a little something of himself. Blood, semen, whatever. The forensic team, those meticulous folks in white coats, they swoop in, they collect the DNA and process it. But instead of running it through CODIS, the usual FBI database of criminal DNA profiles, which, let's face it, only work if Joe already had been convicted of a crime and was a felon, they do something a little different, something a bit more genealogical. They create a special kind of DNA profile called an SNP profile. Now, don't get bogged down with the science jargon. Just know that SNPs, or single nucleotide polymorphisms, I'm amazed I said that without screwing up, are like tiny variations in your DNA that make you you. It's like the difference between spelling color without a U, a tiny difference. But it matters. This SNP profile is different from the standard profiles used in CODIS because it allows for comparisons to the type of data held by those consumer genetic testing companies, the ones your Aunt Mildred used to prove that she's related to Pocahontas. I actually had a nanny once that claimed that. Now, originally, the go-to place to upload this SNP profile was a website called GED Match. Think of GED Match as a wild west of genetic genealogy. It was a public database where anyone could upload their DNA data from various testing companies to find relatives. It was like the Facebook of DNA, but instead of poking someone, you were finding out you shared a great-great-great-grandparent. It was cool, though unregulated, which, don't worry, we'll get to that in a minute. So the SNP profile from our crime scene gets uploaded to GED Match, or a similar, now more regulated database. The system then compares it to all the other profiles in the database, looking for matches, people who share significant chunks of DNA with the crime scene sample. These matches are relatives, maybe close, maybe distant, maybe very distant, but definitely related. Here's where the real detective work begins. This is when the genetic genealogists, the C.C. Moores of the world, step in. These folks are like the Sherlock Holmes of family trees. They take these DNA matches and start building out family trees, painstakingly piecing together lineages using birth certificates, death certificates, census records, obituaries, the whole nine yards. They're basically building a massive, sprawling family tree, like that crazy wall of string and photos you see in detective movies. But instead of mugshots, it's filled with names and dates going back generations, and not everyone's a criminal. Now, the goal isn't just to build one family tree. It's to build multiple family trees, each one stemming from a different DNA match. And then, this is the crucial part, they look for intersections, the points where these different family trees converge, because somewhere in those intersections, hiding among all those branches and leaves of the family tree, is the likely perpetrator. Think of it like this. Imagine you're trying to find a specific apple in a giant orchard. You know, like you do. You don't know which tree it's on, but you know it's red, ripe, and it fell recently. IgG is like finding several people who recently found the red ripe apples in the orchard. By mapping out where each person found their apple, you can narrow down the area where your apple likely fell, and eventually you find the right tree. Once the genealogists have narrowed it down to a small group of individuals, or even just one, who lived in the right place at the right time and fit the profile of the perpetrator, it's back to traditional police work. The cops don't just show up and arrest someone based on a family tree. No, they need hard evidence. So they'll conduct surveillance, interview people, and ultimately they'll try to obtain a direct DNA sample from their suspect. That sample is then compared to the crime scene DNA using traditional forensic methods, the CODIS kind. And if it matches, boom, case closed, right? Well, kind of. Let's take a real-world example, the case of April Tinsley, a little girl murdered in 1988. This case went cold for over 30 years until IgG came along. Genealogists were able to use the DNA from the crime to narrow it down to two brothers. From there, old-fashioned police work took over and some covert trash pulling. They got a DNA sample that was a match, and John D. Miller was arrested for the crime in 2018. It took three decades, a revolutionary technique, and some distant relative who wanted to know their ancestry, but justice was finally served. Okay, so we've established that IgG is a pretty powerful tool. It's like having a genetic informant in every family, even if that informant is your second cousin twice removed, who just wanted to know if they were eligible for Italian citizenship. But does it actually work? You bet your sweet bippy it does. I think I've ever used the word bippy in a sentence. Let's talk about some real-life boogeymen, IgG, that have been yanked from society, from the shadows, into the harsh light of justice. This is, I don't know, let's call it Chapter 3, IgG in action, triumphs and solved cases. From the Golden State Killer to your local cold case files. Let's start with the big one, the case that really put IgG on the map. The granddaddy of them all, the Golden State Killer. This guy was a one-man crime wave, a real-life horror show. We're talking about a serial rapist and murderer who terrorized California for over a decade. From the mid-70s to the mid-80s, over 50 rapes, at least 13 murders, and countless lives shattered. This wasn't just some guy with a grudge. He was a monster. For decades, he was the ultimate cold case, the one that got away. Cops had his DNA, but no match in CODIS. They had sketches, but no one recognized him. He was a ghost, a phantom, a terrifying reminder that sometimes evil wins. And then came IgG. Using the method we talked about earlier, crime scene, DNA, an SNP profile, GED match, and a whole lot of genealogical elbow grease, investigators finally got a hit. They narrowed it down to Joseph James DeAngelo Jr., a former cop, no less. Can you believe it? The guy who swore to protect and serve was a monster. The monster they've been hunting for all those years. Talk about a plot twist. M. Night Shyamalan couldn't make this up. The Golden State Killer was huge. It was like catching the Loch Ness Monster if Nessie was a serial killer who liked to break into your house and tie you up. The arrest of DeAngelo sent shockwaves through the true crime community and beyond. It showed the world that IgG was not just some theoretical concept. It was a game changer. But the Golden State Killer is just the tip of the iceberg, folks. IgG has been used to solve a whole slew of cases, such as chilling as the last. Let's take a look at the NorCal rapist, Roy Charles Waller. This creep assaulted at least 10 women across six counties in Northern California over a 15-year period. For years, he was just another unknown assailant, hunting down women and people and haunting the nightmares of his victims. IgG changed all of that and gave those women a sense of justice that they thought would never come. And there's a case of Buckskin Girl, or the Buckskin Girl, a young woman found murdered in Ohio in 1981. For 37 years, she was unidentified, a Jane Doe. Her story untold. IGG finally gave her a name, Marcia King. Obviously, it didn't bring her back, but it gave her family some closure, some answers to the agonizing questions that had haunted them for decades. Is it a tool that can even identify the perpetrator posthumously? Like the case of Lyle Stevic? Yeah. This was a John Doe who committed suicide in a motel room in 2001, who was identified 17 years later as James Robert Johnston, ending the mystery that had become a source of morbid fascination on the internet. And the list goes on. Rapes, murders, unidentified remains, cases that had gathered dust for decades, all solved thanks to IGG. We're talking about dozens, maybe even hundreds of cases by now. And the number keeps growing. Every solved case is a testament to the power of this technology, a victory for justice, and a ray of hope for families who thought they'd never know what happened to their loved ones. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. These stories are grim. They're about violence, loss, and the darkest parts of human nature. But they're also about perseverance, ingenuity, and the unwavering belief that justice can prevail even after years of darkness. IGG is giving a voice to victims who can no longer speak for themselves. It's bringing closure to families, and it's making criminals think twice before leaving their DNA at a crime scene. Because now your family tree can rat you out. Your third cousin's spit sample could be the key to your undoing. Think about it for a second. But there's always a but, right? This seemingly magical crime-solving tool isn't without drawbacks. We've seen the triumphs, the solved cases, the justice served. Now it's time to delve into the murky waters of ethics, privacy, and the potential for its powerful technology to be misused. Let's get one thing straight. IGG raises some serious ethical questions, the kind that keep legal scholars and privacy advocates up at night. And frankly, they should keep you up too, unless you're totally cool with your genetic information being used in ways you never imagined, which, hey, maybe you are. But hear me out. The biggest concern, the elephant in the room, the 800-pound gorilla with a DNA sample kit, is privacy. When people spit into a tube and send it off to 23andMe or Ancestry or wherever, they're thinking about finding long-lost relatives. Maybe discovering they've descended from royalty, or at least someone who owned a decent-sized farm. They're not thinking about their DNA being used to catch their third cousin, twice removed, who happens to be a serial killer. But is that a bad thing? And that's the crux of this issue, informed consent. Did these people really understand that their genetic data could be used in criminal investigations? Does it matter? Did they knowingly agree to become unwitting genetic informants? Does it matter? Probably not. Most of these terms of service agreements are longer than War and Peace. Let's be honest, who actually reads them? You just click agree, and then get to the fun stuff. Like finding out you're 2% Neanderthal. The lack of informed consent has led to accusations of genetic surveillance. Think about this. Even if you've never taken a DNA test yourself, your relatives might have. And though and through them, law enforcement could potentially identify you. It's like being tracked through your family tree, whether you like it or not. It's a bit big brother-ish, kind of. And it raises the chilling possibility that we're all just one DNA test away from being caught up in a criminal investigation, even if we've done nothing wrong. Or is it? And there's the issue of data security. These genetic databases contain the most sensitive information imaginable about millions of people. What happens if they get hacked? What if the data falls into the wrong hands? We've seen data breaches with credit card companies, social media platforms, even government agencies. Are genetic databases really any more secure? The thought about your genetic blueprint being sold on the dark web is enough to make you think about deleting your entire online presence and live in a cabin in the woods, writing creepy letters to people. Okay, maybe not. That might really get you into one of these databases. Now, to be fair, things have changed a bit since the Golden State Killer case. GED Match, the original go-to database for IGG, got a wake-up call. They realized that they were in the middle of an ethical minefield, and they made some simple changes. They implemented an opt-in system where users now have to specifically consent to have their data used for law enforcement purposes. Other databases like FamilyTree DNA followed suit, establishing stricter guidelines for working with law enforcement. Now, here's the thing. It's still a bit of a patchwork system that's been put together. There are no clear, comprehensive regulations governing the use of IgG. It's like the Wild West all over again. But instead of gunslingers, we have genetic genealogists. And instead of gold, we have DNA. The lack of oversight raises concerns about potential misuse, about bias, and the possibility of IgG being used for less than noble purposes. For example, what's to stop law enforcement from using IgG to investigate minor crimes or to identify protesters at a political rally or to track down undocumented immigrants without clear rules and regulations? The potential for abuse is real. We need to decide as a society what are acceptable uses for this powerful technology and what lines should never be crossed. And are those discussions needing to happen now before it's too late? Probably. There's also arguments about limiting its use to only violent crimes, which, given how many cold cases have been solved, seems to be working. But where do we draw the line? Is burglary not enough? Public indecency? Jaywalking? Or that last one, it's kind of a joke. But you see the point. This is a slippery slope that needs some serious guardrails. I'm not saying IgG is inherently bad. It's a powerful tool that can bring justice to victims and closure to families. But like any powerful tool, it needs to be used responsibly and ethically. We need to balance the need to solve crimes with the right to privacy. We need to have a serious conversation about informed consent, data security, and the potential for misuse. We need to make sure that in our quest to catch the bad guys, we don't turn ourselves into a society where everyone is a potential suspect and privacy is a thing of the past. Because your DNA, my friends, is not just a blueprint for your physical traits. It's a window into your past, your present, and potentially your future. And we need to decide, collectively, who gets to look through that window and under what circumstances. The future of crime solving and maybe even the future of privacy as we know it depends on the choices we make today. We've gone through a big journey here of investigative genetic genealogy. We've seen how it works, the cases that it's solved, and its ethical dilemmas it's created. Now let's put on our futuristic goggles and gaze into the crystal ball, shall we? What does the future hold for IgG? And what does it mean for us, the regular folks? The potential genetic informants of tomorrow. Well, that's where we come here, the future of IgG. More cases, more questions, and your DNA's place in all of it. And we're going to take a look at a current case where it's being argued. One thing is for sure, IgG is not going away anytime soon. In fact, it's only going to get bigger, better, and probably more controversial. The technology is constantly evolving. DNA sequencing is getting faster, cheaper, and more accurate. The databases are growing, and more people succumb to the allure of tracing their ancestry, and the methods used by genetic genealogists are becoming ever more sophisticated. What does that mean for crime solving? Well, we can expect to see even more cold cases cracked, more victims identified, and more criminals brought to justice. The success rate of IgG is only going to improve, making it an increasingly indispensable tool for law enforcement. We might even see the day when IgG is used routinely in active investigations, not just for decades-old cases. And speaking of active investigations, let's talk about the case that's making headlines as we record this, the tragic murders of the University of Idaho students, allegedly at the hands of Brian Koberger. I'm not going to get into the grisly details about this case, but what's relevant here is that IgG played a role in identifying Koberger as a suspect and sent shockwaves around the legal and scientific world. The defense, naturally, trying to poke holes in the IgG evidence. They're throwing around terms like junk science and claiming that IgG is unreliable and that it can lead to false positives. They're basically arguing that your grandma's genealogy hobby could land an innocent person on death row. But here's the thing. They're wrong. Or to put it more diplomatically, they're grasping at straws. The science behind IgG is solid, and it's getting more refined with each passing day. The idea that IgG routinely produces false positives is simply not supported by the evidence. In fact, it's the exact opposite. When done correctly, IgG is incredibly accurate. It doesn't just point the finger at a random person. It narrows down the suspect and the pool of people based on variable genetic relationships. The defense's argument in the Koberger case are likely a sign of things to come as IgG becomes more prevalent. We can expect to see more challenges to its validity in court. Defense attorneys will try to paint it as unreliable, as some sort of genetic witch hunt. But of course, by and large, have so far recognized the scientific validity of IgG, which presented and applied correctly can be very, very powerful. And as the technology continues to improve and as more cases are successfully prosecuted using IgG, these challenges will likely become less and less effective. But as IgG becomes more powerful, the ethical questions surrounding its use will only become more pressing. We need to grapple with issues like expanding databases. Should there be a national, even an international, genetic database for law enforcement purposes? And if so, who would have access to it and under what conditions? The idea might sound like science fiction, but it's not as far-fetched as you might think. The algorithmic bias? Could the algorithms used in IgG be biased, leading to wrongful identifications of suspects based on their race or ethnicity? This is a concern that plagues many areas of artificial intelligence, and IgG is no exception. Genetic privacy laws, how can we strengthen laws in this area to protect genetic privacy in the age of IgG? Will we see new legislation specifically addressing the use of genetic genealogy in criminal investigations? And will those laws be enough to safeguard our privacy rights? These complex questions are ones we need to ask now. There's no easy answers. But they are conversations that need to happen. And they need to involve not just scientists and law enforcement, but also everyone. Policymakers, the public, all of us. So what's the takeaway here? IgG is a powerful tool with the potential to revolutionize crime solving. It already is. It's already brought justice to countless victims and closure to families, but it's also a technology that demands careful consideration and responsible use. We need to find a way to harness its power for good while mitigating the risks to our privacy and civil liberties. And for you, what can you do in all of this? Now you can start by educating yourself about IgG, learn how it works, understand the ethical implications, and engage in the conversations, and shut down people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. Talk to your friends and family about it. Consider the implications before you take a DNA test. And if you've already taken one, review the privacy settings on your account if you're worried about something. Ultimately, the future of IgG and the future of genetic privacy is hand in hand. We have to say a lot about this and how its technology is used, what kind of society we want to live in. We want to live in a world where our DNA can be used to solve crimes, even if it means sacrificing some of our privacy. Or do we want to draw the line in the sand and say, no further, you can only use these tools to solve crimes and get the bad people? There's no easy answers, but one thing is certain. The conversation around IgG is just beginning, and it's a conversation that will shape the future of crime solving, the future of privacy, and our very fabric of society. The gene genie, as they say it, is out of the bottle. We can't put it back. The question is, what are we going to do with it? That's our report for today. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.